This is a public service announcement, sponsored by Just Blaze and the good folks at Rockefeller Records.
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is Ho, Ho, H to the O-V. I used to move snowflakes by the O-Z. I guess even back then you could call me CEO of the R-O-C-O. Fresh out the frying pan.
Welcome to the Naked Bootleg Podcast presented by the Boston Herald. I'm Evan Lazar. Here with me is Adam Kirchin and the first ever guest of the show. But before we get to that, the podcast is officially on iTunes now. So please go subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us a review, give us a rating, tell us how bad we are, all that good stuff. But now I want to bring in the first ever guest of the Naked Bootleg podcast, Mr. Kevin Duffy of Mass Live. Kevin, thanks for coming on.
I appreciate it. I didn't realize I was the first guest
first
ever. Yeah, put a lot of pressure on me to make a good impression here. Yeah.
Adam, how's things going, man?
Things are going well. I'm just waiting for a phone call on a feature I'm doing. I'm doing a feature this week on Adam Butler, who is very accommodating this week. Nice guy. Obviously one of those roster bubble guys. And it was interesting. I talked to him yesterday, what seems like 4 years ago because it was such an early open locker room. But and he said that he came to camp at 6'5", 305, and now he's 285, which is crazy.
That's those hills at work right there is what that is.
But he said it was a good thing because it gives him a chance to go up against ends as well as go up against tackles as much as he goes up against guards, and he's still got the same power, but now he's got more agility and stuff like that. And I asked Bill Belichick about that yesterday as well. And, you know, it just seems like, you know, when guys reshape their body this much in such a short period of time, it really changes how you can evaluate a player and what he can do. So it's going to be really interesting over these next 2 weeks to see what exactly he can do. He does look pretty quick out there for a guy his size. And he's just one of those guys that it's going to come down to the last minute whether or not he makes the team. But he's definitely got some value early on.
We didn't talk about this beforehand, but one of my questions to Kevin was going to be on Adam Butler because I wanted to get his opinion on the guy because he played pretty well against Houston. I thought, obviously, I don't see practice day to day, so I want to get your two takes on what he looks like every day because he put a pretty sweet spin move on, I forget who the tackle was, but pretty sweet spin move against the Texans, got a QB hit out of it. He looks pretty good out there.
Yeah, I think, Adam can probably shed some light on him since he talked to him for a good amount of time yesterday in the locker room. I haven't really talked much with Adam Butler, but I've watched him every day, and I think he's been a guy since pretty much the first week of camp who's been working with the first teamers in some regard. He's really played like a good amount of like sub defensive tackle, so when they're in like a 3-3-5 kind of situation, he's playing over the nose as the D tackle. And then recently out in West Virginia, maybe in part due to the injuries that they had, he started playing a little bit defensive end. He was actually in a stand-up position for some of those practices against the Texans. I think he's a guy they like a lot. I mean, they've got 20 undrafted free agents. The only guy I think is a home run to make the team is Harvey Longy. And then I would put Adam Butler right there is probably the second most likely undrafted free agent to make the squad. It's just, he's in a position group where, I mean, I don't know how many, the fact that he can play DN will help him a little bit because I don't know how many D tackles you're going to carry. You've got Malcolm Brown's a lock, Vincent Valentine's a lock, Alan Branch is a lock, and who am I missing? And Lawrence Guy is a lock. So that's four guys right there. Are you really going to carry a fifth pure D tackle? Probably not. So I think his chances of making the team are it hinges slightly on how much flexibility he has, how much he can play end, and how much they'd like to use him at that spot.
Right. I mean, if he can play end, it seems like a 6'5", 285-pound guy now with great athleticism, it looks like it. That's an area that they really need a boost, and it seems like a guy that they could really hang on to and not let go. I mean, what else do you need to see out of Adam Butler, I guess, is the question, you know, for him to make the team, because, you know, they're so thin there anyways at this point.
Yeah, I think it could be one of those deals where they carry an extra guy in him if somebody from another position group is not there. Mm-hmm. So, but one of the things I've really seen, it's one of those things too where, you know, in the spring you can't really tell with any of these linemen because they don't have pads on and there's not real hitting or anything like that. But he did sort of stick out in these practices, and really I think losing that weight was important because he is pretty quick and he's got good feet. And when you've got good feet at that size, you can do a lot of different things. Now, is, you know, like Kevin said, is he gonna play some, you know, strong side defensive end with that size? I mean, any more versatility you can get out of a guy like that, then that's obviously a plus on his side. Mm-hmm. And even though somebody like Vincent Valentine, you know, is on the roster for sure, it doesn't necessarily mean that he's far and away of, you know, a better player than somebody like Adam Butler, because I feel like there is a kind of a drop off after those first three guys, in Guy, Branch, and Malcolm Brown. So it, in terms of talent level and skill level, I think he could be good enough to make it into the rotation in some way. But obviously, as a rookie, an undrafted rookie, it's not somebody that is going to be, a regular contributor right away, I don't think. But he could play his way into that, and especially if he, like we said, can work his way into multiple roles.
Yeah, it just seems like a position of need that they can't really turn away too many 6'5", 290-pound guys that can rush the passer and play a couple different spots on the front. The other thing I wanted to ask you about, Kevin, you know, we saw the two of them play together a little bit against the Texans. It wasn't really the best dress rehearsal for Malcolm Butler, but I feel like we kind of have forgotten that Malcolm Butler and Stephon Gilmore are the two starting cornerbacks on this team, with all the talk about the pass rush and the front seven and what they're losing at defensive end especially. You know, they have these two potential all-pro cornerbacks that are going to kind of hold things down in the secondary. What have you seen from them in practice that maybe will get people a little bit more excited than what we saw from Malcolm Butler against the Texans?
Well, actually, I don't know if this will get people more excited. Probably not. Butler, I don't think Butler had a particularly sharp week of practice in West Virginia versus the Texans. He actually had a play very similar to the 37-yarder he let up on the sidelines, where he was in perfect position when the ball arrived, and he just didn't jump or make a play on the ball. That same exact thing happened to him in practice on a throw to the short corner of the end zone to Jalen Strong. Butler had him covered pretty well, but the ball arrived, Jalen Strong went up and got it, and Butler either mistimed when he was going to jump or something occurred where Butler didn't jump. So kind of strange to see that same thing happen twice in a week, but it's, you know, it's probably just an aberration. The guys had obviously two straight years of sustained success as a Pro Bowl level cornerback, and I thought Gilmore was really good in the Texans game. So they're, you know, you're looking at probably one of the best five cornerback duos in the league, and that might be underselling it. You know, if they play to their potential, you could see them as maybe one of the top two or three unit cornerback tandems.
Yeah, Kevin, also I wanted to ask a little bit about Harvey Longhi in general. Mm-hmm. Seems like he's a guy that will make one good play and then one sort of head scratcher, or two good plays and then two head scratchers. but it seems like he's sort of getting better. Have you sort of seen that? And, you know, obviously I wasn't in West Virginia, but how do you feel he is doing? And it seems like they've almost settled on a role with him on the left side, you know, being on the edge.
Yeah, it looks like, I mean, it's just kind of weird. He's been in that role ever since basically day one of camp. And for an undrafted free agent, that's a lot. I mean, you really don't see rookies getting that kind of run with the starters at the beginning of camp, let alone undrafted rookies getting that run. So it's a reflection, I think, of how they view his potential. And clearly he has athletic traits that they like a lot, and they view him as a guy who they can mold and create an impact player in the next couple of years. I think, you know, there's been so much buzz around Dante Hightower returning and taking over that spot. And I think we're going to see, once Hightower plays, I don't know how much long he's going to play on defense. I think he's going to be a guy who plays on some special teams and maybe in some situations defensively. But I would imagine the Patriots are encouraged by the way he's come along in his short time here. And I think that it's hard to fathom a scenario where he doesn't make the 53-man roster at this point. I'm sure you are in agreement with that, Adam.
I'm definitely in agreement with that. And speaking of young guys, even though he was on the team last year, I still consider him a relatively inexperienced guy. In a Landon Roberts, obviously one of our favorite guys in the locker room, Kevin.
He's a good dude.
He is definitely a good guy. And so, he's obviously had some inconsistencies in these games. He's gotten knocked out a couple times. It looked like both times by his own player. Longy in the first game, it looked like nicked from behind. And then Jonathan Freeney in the second game. But what I keep coming back to, you know, even though that it seems like they're going to keep a lot of linebackers, and I still think they keep a Landon just for the fact that, yeah, like David Harris has gotten a lot of time, and he could be, you know, the guy in the middle at the beginning of the season. But at the end of the day, a Landon has shown promise. He's young. You know, Harris is 33 years old.
Right.
You know, I still think no matter what, even though he's had some missteps here and there in terms of, you know, choosing the wrong hole in on a running play, or, you know, getting lost in coverage here or there, I still think he makes this team. I was just curious on your thoughts on Landon.
Yeah, I have him on. I think he's getting kind of close to the bubble, but for a lot of the reasons you outlined. So his spot is in part, I think, what they do with Hightower is going to impact Roberts, because if they want to play Hightower a lot at outside linebacker, they probably need someone else besides David Harris, because what if David Harris gets hurt, or what if do you immediately want to move Hightower back there, or do you want to keep Hightower in his spot and then have somebody else for Harris? Also, what if David Harris isn't that good? I mean, there's been times where David Harris hasn't exactly – we talk about Landon Roberts' inconsistencies. David Harris, I don't think, had a great week in West Virginia. He really had some trouble covering running backs out of the backfield when he was assigned to do that. I don't know how much he'll do that when the regular season comes around, but Landon is a guy who he's a guy who you're going to have for 4 years. Harris is probably a one-year player here. Landon Roberts, he flashes all the time. I think they really like his potential. He makes impact plays in the running game. He gives up big plays sometimes, and he's got to stop that, because he can't be on the field giving up 63-yard passes to running backs and taking poor angles and guessing the wrong hole. But what he does well is pretty unique, and I don't know if they have another guy on the roster who is quite like him. So I think just, you know, he's a young player, and he's done some really good things in a short time in New England. So I think it's a little early to cut bait on him.
Yeah.
I would say he's probably safe, but he's got to show better in these next two games, especially in this game against Detroit. If he gets some run with the starters, he's got to show a little bit better than he did in the games one and two, I think.
Yeah, I think one of the things that me and Evan have talked a lot about is, in general, linebackers in coverage with this team. I mean, I know, you know, a lot of Pats fans made a big deal about Zach Cunningham getting burned by Burkhead and then DJ Foster in this Texans game. But I feel like that's not something that the Patriots linebackers are very strong at this point either. That, like, when a team that has, you know, quick, fast running backs that can get out into that second level against the Patriots linebacker, they're usually toast. And so we saw that in the Super Bowl a lot, and for some reason the Falcons went away from it when they could have put the game away. But do you feel like that's sort of an organizational problem here right now, that there's not that one great coverage linebacker? I mean, you look at who they got, who they traded away in Jamie Collins. I mean, he's a guy who I think can still run with, you know, as fast a running back as you can get.
Yeah.
Right now, I don't see them having that kind of guy.
No, I think Van Noy has the athletic ability to do it better than some of the other guys. You know, depends on, I think Hightower can do it a little bit, but they'd probably rather use him in other ways. And, you know, McClellan and Van Noy have a little bit. Van Noy athletically is not Jamie Collins. He's probably not that close, to be honest, but it's similar mold of a player. So Van Noy's going to play a lot for them this year. And I think that last year when he came in, they were tinkering with how they were going to use him. And really, he ended up playing a good amount by the end of the season, I felt. So I think when you're looking at linebackers and coverage, he's probably the closest thing you have to a sure thing. He's their best bet. And, I mean, I'm having so much trouble answering the question that I guess I do agree with you that it is kind of an issue for the team. But they do have – they have some bodies there. It's a matter of someone emerging from that pack.
Right. I wonder, and I guess this is more of like an NFL-centric thing, not necessarily focused on the Patriots, but with all these just uber-athletic running backs that can catch the ball out of the backfield like receivers these days, it's almost like covering them with a linebacker is starting to get a little bit outdated, you know?
Yeah.
We can see every single linebacker get torched by a really good running back in just about every game that you watch across the NFL these days. I mean, Zach Cunningham, yes, he's a rookie, but he's as athletic of a linebacker as you're going to find in the NFL. I mean, the guy is an absolute monster at the combine.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It was one of the reasons why they drafted him, because they thought he'd be better in coverage than a guy.
Right. And it's not even just to pick on Cunningham. I mean, it's true about every linebacker group in the NFL pretty much nowadays, is that whenever you get a running back in space against them on one of those angle routes or to the flat even sometimes, it is really tough to cover these guys. I mean, you're asking a linebacker who's 235, 240 pounds, in some cases even a bit heavier than that, to cover a guy like a David Johnson or a Le'Veon Bell out of the backfield. It's like, it's no contest. You know, it's never going to be close. Yeah. I just wonder, and I don't know, Kevin, have you thought about this at all, but I just wonder if there is going to be a change in approach to covering these guys with linebackers, and maybe start covering them with more coverage safeties or a slot corner or something like that.
Yeah, that's a good thought. And, you know, I think, especially when you look at a team like the Patriots, they might play three safeties more so than they did last year, depending on matchups. And Patrick Chung's a guy that we don't really talk about too much in the media, but he's pretty valuable to them because he really can do a number of different things. He covers tight ends. He can cover receivers in man-to-man coverage, slot receivers. He doesn't really cover the deep part of the field as a true free safety. That's really the only thing he doesn't do. He's great in run support. He does tight ends, receivers. I'm sure if they were to play an alignment where he was assigned to cover running back, he has the capability of doing that. So, as you said, Evan, maybe those type of players, guys who might be a little bit smaller but still effective against the run, will be more prevalent as we go forward. And you're right, teams throw to backs all the time. Like guys like, I mean, guys like Devontae Freeman, and I mean, if you look at New Orleans, always has a running back that kind of fits that mold. And the Patriots probably are the best at it. Deion Lewis and Burkhead. And Burkhead, for a guy who didn't really catch passes in Cincinnati, he's never had more than 40 receiving yards in a game. And his first game ever with the Patriots.
We talked about that last week. I mean, he's had his 34 career receptions, and he's probably going to double that with the pass.
What's nuts about him, and I'm getting a little off topic from your question, is that he catches the ball so naturally, and he runs routes pretty naturally for a guy who, at least looking at the stat sheet, hasn't done it that much. Like, he really didn't play much offense in Cincinnati, but Ivan Fierce said before the season, like, you know, he's a tough kid, runs hard, and he catches the ball pretty easily on film. And we saw that in the first game, and we've seen it in practice. There was one instance in West Virginia when he ran probably what was, I don't know, like a 12, 15 yard out, and caught the ball along the sidelines and had the awareness to tap both feet in bounce as his momentum was carrying him out. So he does a lot of things that most backs, I don't think it's natural for them to do. And it's kind of impressive because it's not like he has a ton of experience doing this at the NFL level. This is a guy who really sat behind Jeremy Hill and Gio Bernard and really hardly played for 4 years in Cincinnati.
Yeah, he's been hidden for sure. I just feel like in across the league, what's going to happen is that teams are going to adapt to these athletic running backs catching passes, and they're going to put smaller guys on the field, and then maybe eventually the offenses will react the other way and start pounding the ball a little bit more on the ground and to kind of scheme them off the field that way. But either way, you know, it's just not fair to put Alonin Roberts against Devontae Freeman in coverage. Like, yeah, it's just not fair to him. Like, he's not going to cover that guy. It's like putting me against Devontae Freeman. You know, it's like, it's just going to be ugly. And it's for a team like the Patriots that are so focused on always putting guys in a position to succeed. Patrick Chung's a great example of that. You know, they don't ask him to do stuff that he's not able to do. I just would wonder if maybe to get away from kind of the linebackers getting vulnerable in coverage, that they go that direction instead.
Yeah, it's very possible.
And one last thing I want to touch on before we move on to our sort of around the league looks is, you know, you look at the tackle situation right now, and your starters are good. You got Cannon, who had an incredible year last year, and Solder, who's certainly, I think Evan and I both agree, is underrated by a lot of Patriots fans. And then after that, you know, what does the situation look like? I mean, I felt like Cameron Fleming actually played better than he did the week before against Jacksonville in the Houston game. But, you know, we still don't know what's holding Tony Garcia back so much. And, you know, Connor McDermott, I don't know if you want him out on the field in the regular season. I'm not sure what you're going to get out of Adrian Waddle. So I'm looking at the tackle depth, particularly the left tackle depth, and wondering what exactly to expect going forward. I would think that Fleming would be the next guy up, but, you know, how effective would he be? And, you know, what are the sort of the expectations there? So should something happen to Solder, knock on wood?
Yeah, that's something I think we all overlooked a lot in the early in training camp. We just assume that the Patriots have, like, incredible depth everywhere, which they mostly do. You know, Fleming last year was pretty good when he filled in week one at left tackle, week five at right tackle. But those were just, like, spot fill-ins. Like, it was only two games. If one of those guys were to miss an extended period of time, like if Cannon or Solder suffered a long-term injury, I don't know how much confidence you'd have in either Fleming or Waddle. It hasn't – to me, that's the – like Tony Garcia, unless he goes on IR, is going to make the team. We're not sure the nature of his injury. They could IR him and keep both Fleming and Waddle. But right now it looks like either Fleming or Waddle is going to have a roster spot. And the coaching staff early in camp was actually going with Waddle to receive the beginning of the first team reps. Like, they'd always split, but Waddle was working with the first team to begin the set of drills. And then Waddle suffers what Mike Reese reported to be a concussion. So Fleming has received more reps of late. I thought he had his hands full in West Virginia because he was going against Whitney Mercilus pretty much the whole week, and there were definitely some issues there, but I thought he was fine in the game. And I think that he's probably your bet to be the number three tackle. I don't know how, you know, I'm not sure how good you'd feel if Solder goes out for 5 weeks or so and you got to have Fleming there for an extended period of time, but that's just what they have. I mean, the fact is, like, they're not going to find someone better right now off the waiver wire, I don't think.
Right. Right.
You know, so you're not going to have all pros everywhere. Like, that is a – it's slightly concerning because it's such an important position, and you – I mean – Fleming, let's just put it this way. Fleming and Waddle, I don't think either has looked very good in all summer. It's been like which one has lost the – or not lost the job. It's not like a matter of one of them winning the job. It's right. Which one's not losing it.
Right. Right. Well,
exactly. At least Tom Brady gets rid of the ball in about 1.2 seconds these days. So if there's nobody on his blind side, then he'll just have to do that every time. But now we want to get into a little bit of a different segment here with Kevin, players that around the NFL from other teams, specifically teams that the Patriots have gone up against in this preseason that have caught in our eye. I assume that most of these guys are going to be guys that maybe aren't household names quite yet, but we'll see. But we're going to give Kevin the honors and let you go first.
Oh, I get to go first?
Yeah.
Well, there's... You know, I should have looked up the dude's name before. It's the guy, the DN for the Texans. Adam, you know who I'm talking about, right?
You mean from the Jaguars from that first week?
Oh, that guy too, Yannick.
Yeah. Yannick was one I had written down.
Yeah, Yannick was good. Now, there was a guy, hold on. You know what I'll do? I'll look him up and then I'll give you one quick one first. I know Adam and I have talked about this guy. I hope I'm not stealing your guy, that we like this guy.
No.
Deontay Foreman, the running back.
Yeah. I mean, I remember actually watched their first. I watched the first Texans game to mostly to check out Deshaun Watson to see how good he looked, and Foreman was the guy that really jumped out. And after seeing all these rookie running backs, Foreman looks the best to me so far. He looked excellent in that first game, and even against the Pats, even though his stats didn't look so great, you look at his touchdown run. He had the stiff arm and got to the outside. He's a big guy. He's got great speed, and you know, he put up incredible stats for a Texas offense that was didn't have a great offensive line last year, and teams knew he was getting the ball a lot. So I think the Texans kind of got a steal there, even though he was picked fairly high. But I really like his potential, and that could be one of the real real difference makers for an offense there that really doesn't have much going for it until, you know, at this point, you know.
Yeah. I think we underrated – somehow one of the best running back classes of all time, like, got underrated at some point, because just the amount of guys around the league right now that are rookie running backs that are flashing is incredible. You know, from the top guys like McCaffrey and Fournette to guys like Foreman and like Tariq Coleman in Chicago and the guy in Seattle who I'm blanking on, Chris Carson, who's I think an undrafted rookie. I mean, there's just a long list of dudes, and Foreman's and one of those guys. I kind of see like a what Eddie Lacy like could have been, you know?
Yeah.
Like a really good Eddie Lacy. And I think that he looks like a really good player.
Yeah, I think I would not be stunned if he took that job from Lamar Miller at some point this year. I don't think Lamar Miller is very good from what we've watched. There's nothing he does that stands out to me, really. Foreman is huge, and he's very athletic for his size. I think he's got a great chance. And then I would throw in to the mix of rookie running backs, you said Alvin Kamara out in.
Oh yeah,
I mean, you got Kamara.
That guy's Alvin really good too.
I mean, there's just a long list of these rookies that are going to come in and and make immediate impacts. Foreman's looked good, but Adam, I mean, over McCaffrey, I mean, when you said that, I was like, oh, man, over McCaffrey, you said he was, like, the best rookie you've seen out there.
Just from what I've seen so far. I mean, I watched them both in college a lot, so we'll see.
Foreman led the FBS in rushing yards last year, I believe, at Texas, and now it's like, oh, he's good at football. It's like, yeah, he had 2,000 yards on the ground last year, so he's pretty good.
But another guy I was going to mention, Kamara too. I was catching up on some of these games that I've missed. Kamara, I think on the first play of the Saints game against the Chargers, had like a long touchdown run where he just ran away from everybody. So, I mean, the Saints, I remember actually at the Best Buddies Challenge, Kevin, you and I were talking about like teams that might surprise in their division. I think you mentioned the Saints just because their offense might be so good. And I really do think that, you know, we sort of fall into that trap every year because their offense is always good, but it really could be one of those deals this year where they run the ball a little bit more and help their defense out. That's one of the, I think, most intriguing divisions in football because you got the Falcons. Everybody loves the Buccaneers, which I do too. The Panthers still have some guys there which you can believe in. And then there's the Saints, obviously. So that's interesting. Another player that I'd like to get your thoughts on, guys, if you've seen him yet, is Patrick Mahomes out of Kansas City. I watched his last preseason game, and it's almost like he's a little bit like he was at Texas Tech in the fact that the way you watch him throw sometimes, you sort of shake your head because his mechanics are a little sloppy, but the end result ends up being so good. And he uses his feet so well to escape traffic. I really like the guy. I thought he was a good pick, but I know he got slammed a lot by a lot of people. But I think even if he doesn't start this year, I think he's going to have a pretty good career in Kansas City.
Yeah, I don't know if I didn't really – I didn't watch that game. I haven't seen much of Mahomes. I don't know if you have, Evan, but I thought it was – I mean, I think it's pretty apparent that they're probably going to transition to him next year as the starter, I would imagine, right?
Yeah, I mean, I would – this might be a little bit premature, but, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he plays this year. His feet are a mess. His feet are absolutely all over the place. I mean, he makes passes where his feet are basically parallel to his shoulders. And it doesn't look pretty. But as Adam said, he's one of the best out of the pocket passers maybe that we've seen in the preseason. Haven't seen a lot of starters quite yet in the preseason for most teams quarterback wise. So that might be why, but. He makes plays out of the pocket look easy. Throwing on the run looks easy. Easy arm strength. I mean, just for Kansas City's ceiling perspective, obviously there's downsides to playing a rookie, no matter who it is. But I feel like he is just everything that Alex Smith isn't, which is ironic because they drafted him. But he is a big armed, gunslinger. Totally opposite of Alex Smith. And that team, in my estimation, is kind of due for a little bit of a setback this year, I think, because they kind of have been overachieving a little bit. And if they are a team that's kind of hovering around 500, I wouldn't be surprised at all if they just cut bait with Smith and put Mahomes in there, because his ceiling and what he can bring to the offense is going to just add so much more than what Alex Smith is going to be able to do.
Yeah, it's funny. When I watch Mahomes, you know when a basketball player like dribbles around and takes a ridiculous bad shot, but it goes in?
Yeah.
That's kind of like when I'm watching Mahomes and he's, there's three guys rushing in on him and he runs backwards 20 yards, but then he'll like juke a guy out and find somebody over the middle for a 20-yard gain. He's got that type of like play. Like I remember – when I first sort of got when I first started really watching him is when, obviously, when he played LSU in that bowl game a few years ago, and they got annihilated, but he was, I think, under pressure the entire game and still found ways to make plays. And they didn't score a ton of points, but it was just like you couldn't get your eyes off him.
Yeah.
So,
when you watch his tape, you just fall in love with the guy. There's no way that you can't, just because of the mentality and the arm strength is just so off the charts that it's pretty impossible not to like the guy.
Yeah.
But the guy that we touched on him real quick, but I want to go back to him because the Jags are one of those teams where I feel like, not to pick on them too bad, but like I feel like you could steal a player from him with a trade if you're the Patriots. And Yannick, and I'm going to butcher his last name, Yannick Ngakoue, I guess is how you probably say it.
Yeah, just call him Yannick.
Yeah, Yannick, I feel like, is a guy that they probably are on to him already to, you know, pass the point of a trade. But he is a three-down player now. You know, he came in as a pass rush specialist that actually has Maryland's single-season sack record from his senior year. But he all of a sudden is looking like a really good prospect. I know you guys saw a lot of him when Jacksonville was in town.
Yeah. Yeah, that whole week he was toasting every tackle he was going up against. And in the game, it was almost – scary for Patriots fans, I would bet, to watch him, you know, go around like a turnstile, Waddle or Fleming for these sacks on your backup quarterback, Jimmy Garoppolo. So it was almost unfair. Yeah, I mean, you almost wanted, you know, somebody like Cannon or Solder to just come in just for that, just to protect your backup quarterback, because it was almost too easy. He's an excellent player. I think he's due for a breakout season. Yeah.
My question would be, though, okay, so maybe the Patriots are trying to target a D-end and a player-for-player swap before the cutdown day. Like, what would they give Jacksonville to get that guy?
Man, that's a good question, because if I'm Jacksonville, he's not even on the trade block unless you offer me something crazy. Mm-hmm. You know, and I would assume that Tom Coughlin and those guys are on to him at this point. For a player-to-player swap, I mean, that's a good question. I can't, there's no one that comes to mind immediately, but I just kind of see him as a guy that maybe they would part with a draft pick.
Yeah,
in the future for, but it would have to be a good draft pick, like a second round pick or something like that, because Yannick was a high draft pick, and now he came in as like a situational pass rusher, but from what we saw when Jacksonville was here, I mean, it looks like he's going to be a three down guy.
I don't think you trade guys like that away in this league.
No.
Yeah. But, I mean, we would all love to see him in Foxborough. I know that.
I didn't realize he was a third-round pick. Yeah, there's no way they're getting him.
Yeah.
There was a guy out in West Virginia, Texans D-end. I might butcher his name, too. It is where are we here? It is Ufumbo Kamalu.
Kamalu, yes.
Yeah. Kamalu, yeah. So this guy, 6'6", 295, he was also – I mean, he was a beast in joint practices, and he's not like how Yannick was a third round pick. This guy was an undrafted free agent.
He's a target. He's a guy that they could go get.
Right. And you're right, Evan. I mean, you can't, like last year when they traded for Barkevious Mango, they gave up a fifth. So you could get some of these trades that happen this time of year are a pick for player. I mean, most trades in general are a pick for player, but you also see sometimes teams with a lot of depth at one spot where they know that some guys aren't going to make the team, trade with a team that has a lot of depth in another spot. So they basically just swap good guys who just are up against stacked position groups. So I'm just curious. I've thought about it myself. I wonder if you guys have any ideas. Like, if the Patriots were to trade a player before the cutdown day, what do you think? What players would be part of that mix?
Well, wouldn't it – be a wide receiver, given how much depth they have at that position.
Maybe. I mean, I don't know what you could get for. Are you talking about Lucien, and Austin Carr?
Maybe, but or really anybody who, really anybody at a stacked position. I mean, it would have to be, I mean, I don't think one of those kids has shown quite enough, though. I mean,
no, yeah, that's what I would say. Yeah.
So,
maybe if DJ Foster has a really good game.
Yeah, DJ Foster or Deion Lewis also has always been rumored. I mean, this is like a major hot take, but I'm just going to say it anyways. And the main reason why I'm going to say it is because his tape, it just hasn't looked that good in the preseason, to be honest. And from what I've heard from you guys about practice, it hasn't been much better. Jimmy Garoppolo.
Oh, really?
And
that's a major hot take.
Major hot take. I don't think he's getting traded. I'm not saying that by any means.
Yeah.
But if a team like Jacksonville were to make a good offer and offer a young pass rusher like Yannick, I don't know. I mean, he hasn't. It's not like Jimmy's come in into these games or into practice and blown the doors off. The contract situation is still exactly the same as it's been all offseason that we've discussed it. And no one's safe, you know, on this team or any team around the league. He's not going to get traded. But I just feel like if there is a trade to be made that would make a huge impact, not, you know, a precarious Mingo type trade for a pick or something like that, that could make a really big impact. And you look up and down the roster, you know, who can they really part with that will get a good return in return? I mean, Garoppolo has been the guy that we've been talking about all offseason, right?
Yeah.
You know, I don't think it's happening, but I'm just saying that, you know, a team like Jacksonville, who just gave up on Blake Bortles essentially as their franchise QB, you know, is it impossible? I don't know. I don't think it's impossible.
I think for the reason, the reason behind that is that it would take something like that to get an asset like a pass rusher that Yannick provides. It would take something big. So in that respect, yeah, it would be somebody like a Garoppolo like type player. But yeah, I don't see that happening either. Just because, you know, you want to go into this season with Jacoby Brissett as your primary backup.
Right, I mean that's the argument against it. Kevin, I'm curious, what have you seen out of Garoppolo? Because to me, when you watch the tape, it just looks like a guy that is that's pressing right now and trying to do a little bit too much out there.
Yeah, thought he was good in the preseason opener. Thought he made one stunningly bad interception in the second game. I mean, it was just. I'm not sure if he said he was trying to throw the ball away or he was actually targeting Hollister, but it was just a terrible decision and a terrible throw. And he's had a handful of those, as Adam can attest to. He's seen it. He's had a handful of those in practice where it's almost, you know, it's almost you ask him afterward, like, are you just throwing those because it's practice? And you've heard quarterbacks in the past talk about, you know, Aaron Rodgers has said things. I think even Brady has said things like you take some shots in practice that you wouldn't normally take in a game. I wondered if that was kind of the case with some of these decisions Garoppolo made in practice, because some of them are just really head-scratching moments. I mean, there was a few. He's thrown the ball directly to Jordan Richards like twice. This is, I'm talking very early in camp, but like it was as if he thought Richards was his receiver in the back of the end zone.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's been a strong camp, a strong summer from him. I think he's had some good moments, both in practice and I thought the preseason opener, he was pretty solid and pretty much in rhythm, looked similar to how he looked in the opener against Arizona last year, but he definitely could be sharper without question.
Yeah. I just feel like, you know, it's obvious that he's still good. You know, I'm not saying he's a bad player by any means, you know, his accuracy is still really good. He's got a pretty good arm, probably at this stage of Brady's career, probably a stronger arm than Brady. You know, I think that right now a lot of it has to do with playing with a backup offensive line and backup receivers in games. But, you know, from what we saw in that first half against Miami to what we're seeing in practice and in the games now, Maybe if, you know, he's with the starters, it's we're talking a, you know, a different tune. But, you know, for the most part, it's been a little bit, I wouldn't call it disappointing, but just lackluster. So, you know, if you're going to get something back in return that's, you know, big time, like a big time pass rusher or something like that, you know, you got to give something up. I think nothing has changed in terms of his future, his contract situation necessarily to just completely take him off the trade block quite yet, in my opinion.
Also, getting back to these around the league stuff, what Kevin, I'm curious because you were at practice all week that week in West Virginia. What did you see out of Deshaun Watson? From what I've seen in the games, he shows flashes, but like his accuracy on some certain balls that like a really good NFL quarterback should hit are just not there. And there was some of that in college too. But then at the end, like, he just gets better by the more he's out there, I feel like. And that's also something that he showed in college a lot. Like, over the course of the game, he improves. So I still overall like him. I just don't think he's quite where he needs to be yet. What are your thoughts on him?
I think that they will probably go with Savage as long as possible. Unless Savage implodes like a Osweiler style season, because the fact is about them, they have a good team. Like they've got an awesome front seven on defense. They've got decent skill position players. Like Hopkins is one of the better receivers in the league. They seem like they're going to be able to run the ball if they just get Lamar Miller the hell out of the lineup, and they go to Foreman. So they've got players around them, and Savage isn't going to set the world on fire, but, I mean, you guys saw the preseason game against the Pats defense. He looked pretty good. He looked like he was 8 for 9, I believe, with the TD. He just had he had a good command of the offense. DeAndre Hopkins has really lobbied for Savage to be the starting quarterback. So I think they're going to go with him. And, you know, Watson in practice looked fine, but you could tell that he was a rookie. He oftentimes just bailed out of the pocket, probably a little prematurely, and he would take off after like his first read. He's not refined yet. It's pretty clear watching him in practice which guy has been playing the NFL for several years and which guy is a rookie. Watson, ton of talent, and will eventually be the Texans starter, I would imagine, at some point. But given the roster construction and the potential of that team for the 2017 season, I would say that they will go with Tom Savage unless he bombs, and then they have no other choice. But I think he's just a better option than Watson at this point.
Watson's accuracy is all over the place still at this point. I mean, he's throwing 5-yard slants, you know, inaccurately at this point. And another thing, you know, the Texans offense is super similar to the Patriots offense, obviously, with O'Brien down there. And it takes a lot of responsibility pre-snap for the quarterback. You know, we see Tom Brady obviously do it, but he's Tom Brady. You know, to put a rookie in there to, you know, do all the checks at the line that the Texans offense needs to do, and then to read the coverage properly and react to it the same way that his receivers react to it, is a tough ask to do for a guy like Deshaun Watson, I think. It's a very complex system the Patriots and Texans run with the option routes underneath and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, every single route is based off of reading the coverage, you know, at the initial snap of the ball. So, you know, if there's a single high safety, then it's one route. If it's too high, it's a different route, you know, stuff like that. So I think that to ask Watson to do all of that right now and then, you know, just talking about the mechanical and the you know, legitimate accuracy issues that he has currently is a lot. And whereas for Savage, he's been in the offense now for a while. Bill O'Brien drafted him. You know, it seems like he has more of a command of the offense in a way that, you know, Kevin kind of alluded to, which is just, you know, he's been around longer and looks like the professional right now out there for the Texans.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to agree with all that. And especially what Kevin said, where he will sort of drop back if his first read isn't there, sort of bail out a little bit. That's something that's happened with him a little bit. And I don't know if you guys have – I know these guys won't play the Patriots, but I'm just curious because there is such a overlap in terms of, you know, it reportedly them really wanting Garoppolo over the off season and offering a king's ransom and never getting anything was the Browns and Deshaun Kizer. Kizer is a guy that, you know, I watched a lot at Notre Dame, and then there was that Texas game last year where he looked like Superman, and then ever since then he had you know, he was just inconsistent, and it happens to a lot of Notre Dame QBs lately. But it seems like he's having a pretty good preseason. Do you think he's somebody that they should just say, okay, look, we're just going to go with you and see what happens? Or do you think they should go in another direction and just sort of bring him along slowly?
I think that they're gonna see what they have with him this year probably, and then reevaluate after that. I mean, if this is a franchise that's been on the hunt for a quarterback for God knows how long, the last stable quarterback they had was probably Derek Anderson for a very brief time. So I think that the ship on them trading for Garoppolo has probably sailed for now, but if Kizer proves to be just another guy during the season, maybe they'll revisit that after the season's over. And as Adam said before, like much earlier, it's kind of a tough spot because there's merit to throwing somebody in the fire right away, but sometimes it's better for these guys to learn a little bit and then go in, because you can have a young player's career ruined just because A, they don't know what they're doing well enough, and B, the people around them aren't good enough to support them. So there's definitely danger in playing Kizer right away, but to me, there's no upside in playing Osweiler. Like, you know, he's not a part of your long-term plans in any way, nor should he be a part of your short-term plans. So I don't disagree with them going with Kizer to start. I think that depending on how it goes, they might revisit the trade market for a quarterback. And, you know, I've thought about the teams that could be in the market for Garoppolo over the next year. Like, say the Patriots do end up trading Garoppolo when he's on the franchise tag. One team I like a lot as a sleeper candidate here, I don't know if you guys would agree, is Arizona. I mean, Arizona really doesn't have a backup behind Palmer. They did sign Blaine Gabbert, and Blaine Gabbert apparently has shown some progress, and he was a former first-round pick, so there might be something there. But this very well might be Carson Palmer's last year, and that's a roster that's built to contend immediately. So I think if Palmer does retire, they'll want to get a quarterback who will have not much of a learning curve, a guy who's been in the league for a few years. So I really do like, if I'm looking at potential landing spots for the Patriots eventually trading Garoppolo, I do like the Cardinals.
That's a great one, because I also think that the Cardinals really wanted to be one of those teams that was going to grab Mahomes, I think. And so, you know, we'll see where they fall this year. I mean, everybody's still talking about how great this upcoming quarterback class is. And so getting a trade in with a team that might not necessarily be in that top three or four range where those really high caliber picks would be is smart. Mm-hmm. And I think Arizona's good enough to not quite be bottomed out, you know, at that.
Yeah, I think Arizona's a great one. I think putting him with Bruce Arians, I think Garoppolo would instantly have a pretty successful career with Arizona. Arians, obviously one of the best offensive coaches in the league and really understands how to make the job easier on the quarterback, hence why Carson Palmer 2 years ago had such a good year, you know, kind of an above Palmer's, you know, whole career path. It's a good one, and I know that I traded Jimmy Garoppolo like 10 minutes ago, but I just kind of feel like, you know, it's more likely that happens than they sign him to any type of long-term extension. I think we can all agree to that. that, you know, maybe they get him to stick around for another year on the tag. And then, you know, if Brady decides to retire at the end of this year or the end of next year, then he can, you know, obviously sign the long-term deal then. But if that doesn't happen, if Brady, you know, somehow continues to find this fountain of youth, you know, Arizona is a really good landing spot for him. And just to get back to Kizer real quick, he's a guy that came out like gangbusters in that first preseason game, threw a 55-yard touchdown, a dime down the sideline on the money, big arm guy. You can see it, you know, right away. And then all of a sudden the Dak Prescott, you know, analogies started to come out, and could he be this year's Dak, you know, so on and so forth. And then in the second preseason game, he kind of took a little bit of a step back, I thought, to kind of, you know, calming that down a little bit with the Dak, you know, comparisons. But he's going to start the third preseason game for the Browns this weekend. So it'll be interesting to see what he does. To me, I mean, the Browns, I don't see why Brock Osweiler is even on this team at this point. I know that I think that ESPN's reporting they're trying to trade him. I don't know if they're going to have any luck doing that, but it seems to me like having Kizer and Cody Kessler, two younger guys that you just drafted, both pretty high, you know, to kind of develop. And if Kizer can't be the day one starter, the week one starter, then Kessler is a serviceable guy. I mean, he's obviously not the future of the position for them, but he's a guy that's can be a nice little stopgap until Kizer's ready. Kizer, I think, is going to be a really good quarterback. I think that for right now, he just is a little bit inconsistent. But that first preseason game, yeah, threw for like 150 yards and a half or something like that, and you kind of got the whole Kizer experience as a Browns fan. Yeah. And I think that that's you know, he's not obviously going to be a guy that's going to completely tear it up like that every week, but he's a good looking quarterback and could very well be the best, you know, quarterback out of this class when everything is, you know, said and done.
All right, so we're at an hour now, so I think we got to cut it here. I think we covered a lot of ground. Obviously, Duff, you have things to do as well. are you going to Detroit or not? I know I asked you this yesterday, but are you?
Yeah, I got a pack right now. Actually,
okay. I gotta hit
the airport soon.
So we're gonna So with Mavs Live, what are you working on right now? Anything that you need to tell the audience about?
It's a good question. Not really. I'm working on a piece for, I don't know when the podcast is gonna run, but I'm gonna run a piece tomorrow about. I know we've hit on these guys a lot in the preseason, but I wanted to examine Cyrus Jones and Jordan Richards a bit more. I wanted to find out what the percentage is of second round picks that are cut after their first year. I'm currently researching that. So I'd imagine it's like 1%. And I'll have an answer on that by tomorrow morning and just kind of weave that into an article about Jones and Richards, just about, you know, looking at the fact that it's pretty wild that both of those guys are legitimately on the bubble, because it's just such a rare thing for a second round pick to be in this kind of position after his rookie season.
Yeah. All right. So that should wrap it up. Like I said, I'm working on an Adam Butler thing. And Evan, anything of note that you're working on right now?
I'm going to have something in the Herald during the whole Patriots season preview issue. Just kind of about the maturation of offenses over the course of NFL history, and you know, what's made a good offense back in the 70s compared to what makes a good offense now. I think the whole theme of the Herald's preview section is going to be, is this going to be Brady's best offense ever in his career? So do something about that. And then, that'll come out, I think, right before week one.
Awesome.
All right, guys.
I appreciate you guys having me.
Yeah, the inaugural Naked Boot podcast guest. It can only get worse from here. All right, guys.
All right, I'll see you guys later. Introduce myself. My name is O. H to the OV. I used to move snowflakes by the OC. I guess even back then you could call me CEO of the ROCO. Fresh out the prior.